Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. If you're new to our podcast, I encourage you to go back and listen to some of our previous guests. We've got some great guests that are coming up at the end of the year as well as in the new year. And this week, we're happy to have joining us Mark Hirschberg. Mark is an author of the Career Tool Book, which is the essential skills for success that no one taught you. He's been educated at MIT, and he has spent his career launching and fixing new ventures and startups. He helped create the Undergraduate Practice Opportunities Program at MIT, the Career Success Accelerator, where he taught for 20 years. Looking forward to today's conversation with Mark. Can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your career path? It's always interesting to hear people's stories.
I have a rather unusual dual career. I came out of MIT back in the 90s and started out as a software engineer. I realized I wanted to become a CTO, a chief technology officer, but understood that to get that role, it wasn't just about being the best engineer. Sure, I needed those skills, but there were other skills: leadership, negotiating, team building, communicating. No one ever taught me this stuff. So I had to develop those skills in myself. And as I did so, I realized these skills are not just for executives, but for everyone. So I started to upskill my team. Now, while I have gone on, I've been a CTO and these days a CTPO. And so I run technology and product at different companies. It turned out MIT had discovered the same shortcoming. Companies were saying, these are the skills we want to find, not just in your students, not just in engineers, but universally, and we can't find these skills either. So MIT put together a program referred to as a Career Success Accelerator. And I said, well, I've developed some material for my staff, happy to give it to you. And I thought that would be it. But instead, they asked me to help develop more content and then to stay on and teach. So I've been teaching in parallel to my building startup companies. In parallel, I've been teaching at MIT for 20 plus years and have also now done the book, the speaking, and other things. So I have these two careers in parallel.
Very interesting. So I ask this question of every guest that we have on. If you were able to go back and talk to a 22-year-old Mark and give him some advice, what would you tell him?
I wish I understood the importance of some of these soft skills, as most people call them. And there was a great analogy I learned from Charles Lazarson, who I've taught with at MIT for years. He gave the following example. Imagine you have a rectangle that's 4 by 10, and you want to increase one of the sides by 2 units to maximize the area. Which side do you increase? And feel free to pause the podcast if you need a moment to remember your sixth grade math. The answer, of course, is you increase the short side. You go from 4 to 6 for 60 units. Okay, great. So that's math. What does this have to do with our careers? If you think about what's happening conceptually, those 2 units of work, the 2 extra units of effort you put forth to get better, if you put them on your long side, they're only amplified by those 4. But when you put them on your short side, you're amplifying that long side. Now, all of us have long sides and short sides. One of my long sides, technology, engineering, one of the CTO. Yours might be finance or sales. And we all think about our long side and developing that. And we should. If I don't keep up with technology, I become a dinosaur. But you get a better ROI, a better return on the time you spend focusing on your short sides. All of us have long sides and short sides, and more than 2. And so we want to continue to develop those long sides. Also put some time into those short sides. That's going to accelerate your capabilities and your career.
So when you're talking to leaders and you've managed a number of teams and worked with a number of executives, what do the common short sides typically be that you think can be skills that people can grow in that will help kind of launch them into the next level of leadership?
Well, it's the 10 skills in the book. And these, by the way, are not just Mark woke up one day and said, hey, I think we should talk about these 10 skills. These come from research done by universities, by hiring staffing companies, by a whole bunch of people. And we see the same patterns over and over. there are 10 areas that I saw consistently across all these different surveys. So I'll give you a quick summary. I've got the 10 chapters and three sections. Section one, career planning. And that has chapter one, career planning itself. Let's create a career plan. Too many people float along and they don't know where they want to go or how to get there. Chapter two, working effectively. Things like managing your manager, understanding corporate culture and politics. Chapter three, interviewing. Now, there's plenty of content on how do you answer or what's your weakness and those kind of banal questions. We don't train people how to interview, and that's a really important skill. Second section, leadership and management, one on leadership, one on the people side of management, and the other on the process side of management. They're both important but distinct. And the last section, interpersonal dynamics, covers four important skills: communication, networking, negotiating, and ethics.
So talk a little bit about the interviewing side of things. I meet a number of leaders that, they maybe have, the first time leaders, they've sat on the other side of the desk and been interviewed, but when they come to a point where they're hiring team members, that's an area that they really struggle. Talk a little bit about some of those skills that can be developed.
And it's not just first-time leaders. I have talked to people, senior executives of publicly traded companies you've heard of, and I'll ask them, what interview training have you had? What do you mean? There's no interview training. And if you think about it, imagine the following. Imagine you've got a 16-year-old kid, and you say, okay, you're 16, you're ready to drive. So listen, you've sat in the car before. You've seen there's a steering wheel, you got a brake. You know how this works. So here you go. Here are the keys. Best of luck. That would be insanity. And yet, what do we do in our companies? We say, well, you've been interviewed before. So here you go. Here's the keys to the interview room. Best of luck to you. We keep saying people are our most important asset. For many companies these days, it is the people. They're the ones who are creating the value. And yet, we're just tossing this haphazard process into finding them. We put more intention into other types of procurement than procurement of our most important asset. Okay, so that's my little jumping on the soapbox, why I am shocked we don't do more. What we need to do is first take that really short side, this side is near zero, and put a little time into it. Train up your organization, couple basic things. And whether you use the techniques in my book, techniques I'm sure you teach people, or otherwise, you're gonna start getting a massive ROI. And that's things like intentionality, understanding what exactly is this job. Now, we think like, well, the job's obvious. It's director of marketing. It's right there in the title. But here's the thing. A director of marketing could be a lot of different things. There are directors of marketing who spend most of their time doing event management because they're running an event a month. That's different than a director of marketing who's spending a lot of time doing social media. You might be doing all of this, but at what ratio? Is it more important that they're good at the events because the social media is 10% of the job, or is it reversed? We're not explicit in the roles. We just throw everything in the kitchen sink. Oh, you got to know this, 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 this. And so one interviewer might prioritize these three aspects. Someone else prioritizes those two aspects, and suddenly you're not prioritizing for anything. So be intentional. What does the role really entail? When you think about on a day-to-day basis, what are the key things that need to be done? What's important? What's less important? Make sure everyone's on the same page. And then how do you assess that in the interview process and then come to a common measurement?
Good advice. So you talk about as far as how to develop a culture of learning. And I've heard you talk about kind of peer learning groups, the importance of having kind of that learning culture. Talk a little bit more about that as far as a leader to develop other leaders and to encourage growth within your organization.
It's remarkable how poorly we do this as companies. At best, we might say, well, I'm promoting you to a management position. Congratulations. Now, sometimes they say, well, that's it. Good luck, right? You've been in the back seat. Now you get to drive. They might say, oh, we're going to send you to a two-day leadership training program. Well, think about, for example, a professional athlete. Do they say, oh, welcome to the baseball team. Okay, here you go. We're going to send you to a two-day baseball clinic. and done. That's it. You're ready to play the season. You've had all the training you need. That would be insanity, and yet that's what we do. Really, the way we need to develop our people is more of a continuous program and through peer learning. Because the way to learn these skills, the ones we've talked about before, it's a lot like learning a sport. It's not one and done, and you have to learn by doing. So the way they're taught at top business schools, the way we teach at MIT, and the way you should be teaching in your company is through peer learning. Create groups, typically, I'd say about 5 to 7 people in size. If you want to scale it up, I have techniques for doing that, but try to keep it small discussion groups. Take some content for them to engage with. Now, yes, you can use my book, and I break down, here's how I use my book. But if you don't want to use my book, that's fine. Use a different book, use articles, use videos, use a great podcast like this one. And you have everyone get that content, read, listen, and then discuss. Because it's in that discussion, if we're talking about leadership, you're going to tell me what you got out of it. I'm going to say different, and we're going to realize, oh, you know, it's different perspectives, because there's no one right way to do it. When you do this, not only are you upskilling your employees, you are also creating better employee engagement, very important these days where people are looking for more than money. You're fostering those internal networks, which is important to success. And you're also creating a common language. If the book you took was Good to Great, and everyone's read that, you can say hedgehog model. Oh, yes, hedgehog model. I know exactly what you mean. So you get these 4 benefits, and it is completely free. You can do this yourself. You don't need to buy anything or bring in any experts to do it.
So as you've seen, and you've managed technical people, and you're a technologist yourself, you understand the technology. But for somebody that's going to be managing technical people, but they're not technical themselves, give some tips on that. Because again, I think every company, even though they might not consider themselves a technology company, technology is a big part of kind of who, you know, what they have to do as far as to be successful. Talk about managing technical people as a non-technical person.
Often you hear it's hard to do so because the engineers don't really respect someone who isn't technical. And that is the case, but it's not unique to technology. Imagine you're running a sales team and you've never sold anything. Do you think the salespeople are going to look at you and say, oh, yes, of course, you're a fearless leader. I trust everything you do. They're going to say, you don't know the first thing about sales. It's really true for any of the departments. Now, the other issue we have is that each department has its own language and frameworks and style that's different from others. Engineers, for example, tend to work in a sprint cycle. They do these periods, typically about 2 weeks in length. Say, all right, we're going to do some work. We're going to plan out what we're going to do. We're going to do it. Now we've done it. Reflect. What next? That's not how salespeople work. Salespeople at many companies, it's, okay, 10 people, you're all on your own. We'll check in once a week, but just go, go, go. In fact, you're competing against each other, right? You've got the sales leaderboards. Engineers don't compete against each other. They collaborate. And just understanding these cultural differences. So whether it's engineering or any department, understanding the culture and the language, you as a manager need to get steeped in that so you can engage them in the way they're used to. Because if you try to make the team adjust to your style, that's going to be a lot harder. You're going to hear the screeching tires because they're bigger than you are. There's more of them than you.
I know you've talked about, I've heard you talk about the importance of having a plan when it comes to meetings, because I think that's part of most people's days is that they have meetings. And sometimes you sit in a meeting and go, "What? Why are we even doing this?" Talk a little bit about that and the importance as a leader to have meetings that kind of help the organization move forward.
You need to be intentional in your meetings, just like in hiring. And now here is a simple model for how to think about your meetings. There's effectively 3 types of meetings, aside from maybe a one-on-one you and I have to get together, but we're talking about really meeting in groups. There's 3 types of meetings. There is the broadcast meeting. I need to update all of you. And that might be the CEO's giving the quarterly address to the company, letting everyone know what's going on, or a couple of the executives, let's give everyone an update presentation. There is the N-to-N meeting. And that might be your weekly staff meeting. Okay, there's five of us. We're all going to go around. Everyone just give your update. Here's what you're doing. Here's any issues you have. And everyone just shares with everyone the meeting. So you're all on the same page. The last type of meeting is a decision meeting. This first two were just information transfer. The third, decision. Hey, we need to make a decision, whether it's the budget for next year or what are we going to spend on the holiday party or should our logo be green or blue? Whatever it is, we have decision to make. Those are the three really elements. Now, you might have a meeting dedicated to just one of those. Often we do, like the weekly status meeting. You might combine them. Hey, everyone, we're going to get together, give updates on the project, and then decide on the direction to go in. But you want to recognize what is each part of the meeting? What are we trying to do? What type is it? And do we have the right people for it? And when you have that intentionality, you can then be much more directed and efficient with your meetings.
Now, I know we talked a little bit before we started the podcast that how our world has changed in the last couple of years, especially with virtual teams. Any tips on managing virtually? And I know you've been doing that with companies and organizations. What are some things you've learned about that in the last couple of years?
I've been doing this for decades, going back to 20-some years ago when we had our offshore teams over in other parts of the world, and I've been doing that ever since. But I actually was running a virtual company in 2017. We were all distributed long before we had to be, and I found a couple things were helpful. One is we would bring the executive team together. I was on the executive team. We would come together at a regular cadence. We'd get the whole team together. So when you think about your whatever group you're part of, whether it's at the executive level or your department, recognize there is some cadence where you want to come together just to kind of keep the pace. There will be times, however, where it makes more sense to be together or apart. So I also, even though I had a team in New York where I live, we didn't get together every day. We were a virtual company. I found we were aiming for 3 days a week in office. Found is about 2.5. So we don't need to be together every day. We aim for 3. What I found is when it was really rainy out or cold or snowy, suddenly I'd get a lot of, you know, the commute is slow today, I'm going to be home. But that's generally that was sufficient for us. But you have to understand what's right for you and recognize that's going to change over the course of a project. Imagine if you're starting a new project, that's where there's a lot of uncertainty, confusion. We have to have a lot of discussions. You might want to be together for, if you're in the same city, maybe 3 or 4 days a week in the office, or maybe you fly everyone together for a solid week. Okay, now you get the project going. You can just have your regular cadence. And now towards the end of the project where it's, hey, did you get this? We got these deadlines. I got to coordinate everything. Again, you might need to be together more often. So don't just say, well, this is our process. Define the process that is right for your particular team and project and culture.
Any, I have to ask you this question because you're in technology. Any apps or things that you use that make you more effective as far as in managing or personally in your own work life?
Bunch. And of course, one that I'm now really addicted to is the one I created, the Brain Bump app. One of the things I found is that I would read a book or listen to a podcast like this and, oh, there's really great information. And then I forget a few days later. Well, that's not good. The tips I gave on the different meetings, oh, right, 3 different meeting types. Are you going to remember that in 3 days? Probably not. I take notes on the books I read, but I never go back and look at them. And so I often forget them. And I recognized, really, we need information in two ways. There is just-in-time information. So I have networking tips in my book. Where do you read those tips? Sitting on your couch. Where do you need those tips? Right as you're walking into the conference, nowhere near your couch. So we need to access those networking tips or type of just-in-time advice right on the spot, when and where it's most relevant. Then there's also foundational advice. Foundational advice, if you're a new manager or leader, you don't know 2 minutes before you need to jump into a problem what exactly is happening. You don't even know until they walked in your door. So you need to build up that foundational knowledge. We know the best way to learn is through spaced repetition. fancy name for look at the book again, but we're not going to do that. So what I've done, we created the Brain Bump app. And in this app, we take content from books, blogs, podcasts, classes, talks. Right now, we have primarily business content. We'll look to expand later, but it's all business content that's relevant to this audience. We take the key ideas from that content, put into the app. You can then access it one of two ways. Either you say, hey, I'm about to go into a networking event, open the app, everything's tagged. So let me get the tips tagged with networking. There we go. Okay, there's everything. Just kind of flip through it on your phone. Okay, good, good, got it, ready to go. Or for that foundational information, what you can do is set it so 9 a.m. each day, you get a management tip. Every morning, you don't even have to open the app because we know you're not going to have time for that. You're a busy manager. So 9 a.m., oh, there's the advice. Great, swipe it away, done. And by seeing it over and over each day, taking just 2 seconds a day, you help build up that knowledge in your head. And so this is how I've really worked to retain a lot more of what I'm reading and hearing.
Mm. And that can be found on in Apple as well as Android?
Yes. If you go to brainbumpapp.com, we'll take you right to the stores because it's Brainbump, no space on Android. Apple, even though it's no space, the search doesn't work that way. So brainbumpapp.com will get you to the right place.
Okay, great. Definitely check that out. So any books that you recommend besides definitely pick up your book, The Career Toolkit, but others that you think would be helpful to leaders?
I have a whole list on the resources page of my website. I actually list about 30 other books, and some of the top ones I'd recommend: PeopleWare by Tom DeMarco and Timothy Lister, one of the best books on management. Nothing to do with software. There's not a line of code in it. Really good about people management. The Charisma Myth by Olivia Fox Caban. You can be more charismatic. Just like you can learn to lead, you can learn to network, learn to negotiate, you can learn to be more charismatic, and that will help you in your leadership and some of your other tasks. So those are two of my favorites.
So outside of work, what do you do to recharge?
I do a lot of work. I have my day job building tech companies, but I love the teaching that I do at MIT and elsewhere. I love the app that we built, which is a side project. I blog. Now I blog for two different blogs every week. I enjoy that. It really, I find it engaging. I also do a lot of entertaining at home, a little less the last few years with COVID, but that should be picking up again next year. I used to host 5 big parties every year, the Halloween party, the chocolate fondue party, and I would do smaller events like dinner parties or other gatherings because it's fun to meet people and to just talk, catch up with friends, but also just get exposed to new thoughts and ideas.
So any parting advice you'd give to a newer up-and-coming leader?
You don't have to know everything. This is a common mistake of new leaders. Think, oh, I have to know the answer. I have to be on top of it. Your job is not to have all the answers. Your job is to get the answers. And that might mean you get it from your team. You get it from peers. You get it from thinking and researching. But it's not just, hey, this is all on you, buddy. Why can't you figure this out? Don't worry if you don't have the answer immediately. Your job is to get the answers.
Well, this has been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed hearing about your work. And how would somebody learn more about what you're working on and in your book?
You can go to my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com. There you can see where to buy the book. Follow me on social media or, again, touch with me if you have questions or want to bring me in to speak. There is the blog I mentioned. One of the two blogs is on that website. And there's an entire resources page. That's where I list some of the books we mentioned, the peer learning we talked about, the first download, completely free. I don't even ask for your email, teaches you how you can do that. And by the way, you can cross my name out, the copyright's open, put your name on there and say, here's a brilliant idea I came up with. I just want you to use this and be successful. There's interview guides on there from both the candidate side and the hiring manager side. So a lot of free resources to help you. All of this at thecareertoolkitbook.com. And then, of course, the app we mentioned, Brain Bump, you can find brainbumpapp.com, also completely free.
Well, I will definitely be checking that out. I encourage our audience to pick up a copy of your book, as well as check out your website for those resources, and wish you continued success in all you're doing.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.